What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you for joining us once again for a long-delayed episode of the Full Sail Podcast. I am your host, Brandon Tomioi, once again joined by David Deep. Dave, how's it going, man?
It's going well, man. It's playoff time. Yeah, ready to get started.
Yeah, but before we get started, got a question for you.
Yes.
Where do you find a Wally Szczerbiak jersey in Japan?
I believe I was in Harajuku, and I was just walking around, and there was a store that sold, I guess they had that streetwear and like secondhand stuff and vintage stuff, and there was a section with a bunch of jerseys, just random jerseys, and I was just browsing through them. You know, they had the Jordan ones and like all the main ones. But then I was like, wait a minute, this is a Wally Szczerbiak. I was like, holy crap.
That was the pearl in the oyster?
Yeah, and I was like, oh, wow. That's all I need to see.
That's all I need to see. Nothing else even on that level, nothing close.
Nothing else mattered at that point.
Oh, man. Nothing even like... I don't know, like a Sam Cassell Celtics jersey?
Maybe a Cassell Celtics or or a Logan Bender Velden Clippers jersey.
That's right. I gotta get that throwback Matt Fish jersey.
There you go.
Represent.
Yeah.
Oh man, but oh sure, I'm sure you saw as I did yesterday, you know, when the games are going down. And my gosh, I don't think I've ever rooted more for the Indiana Pacers than I did last night.
Yeah, I was all about the blue collar gold swagger.
Oh, you know? It's tough. Yeah. Oh, it's tough. I mean, they're there, and you know they Memphis is beat up, but at the same time, you're looking and they've, you know, Indiana's got so many problems throughout the whole season, and then seeing Paul George drop as well, and then have an issue in the middle of the game. I mean, that's yeah. Sucked. I mean, but you know, moving past that game, looks like we got, you know, what the two, yeah, probably the two best teams, number two and three in the league, facing off against each other now in the first round.
Yep. Yep, thanks to the seeding system and a couple of unfortunate bounces in different matches. Here we have the 3 and the 6 seed, the number 2 and 3 ranked team by a lot of people, and statistically too in many categories.
And I mean, Doc's talked about it too. I'm guessing your opinion is probably close to mine. Not that different that you would say that 6th seed should not be the Spurs. It should be PDX.
Right. Yeah. And it's not even that it's because it's the Spurs, you know, that's the issue. It's been flawed for a while. It's like going back to 2006 when the Clippers tanked the final game against the Grizzlies in order to face the 3 seed Denver Nuggets. And they had a home court as a 6 seed. That was the start of it. You know, when that happened, they switched it up. But even then, when they changed it, they made that a division winner can get no lower than a 4 seed. So literally, a division winner can win 40 games, make the playoffs, and still get a 4 seed against a team, you know, versus a team that won 50 games and will get a lower seed. So that it just didn't make any sense, you know, and especially this year when you see two teams that many see as the teams that can contend with Golden State for the West crown have to face each other in the first round. So now one of them is going to have to go home early, while the other one is, well, only one of them makes it. So that it just doesn't seem right.
No, it's tough. I mean, part of it is, it's luck, right? Like they always say, like, okay, if you're going through the playoffs, that it not only takes skill, but takes a lot of luck. And if you look at it right now, I mean, this is one of those cases of luck. It's not just a few bounces that go your way when you're going through the course of the game. It is the matchup. It is who you get paired up with. And if you have some, if that's your first round, and you start, I mean, and that's the thing too is, if you look at it, and let's say that in the worst case, right? Let's start with the bad before you even move on to look at if you look at the worst case and say that the Clippers lose, even if they lose badly, like five games or something like that, or swept. I mean, like God forbid, swept. Yeah. But even in that case, I mean, what can you say? There are going to be the people out there that says, okay, this is just the Clippers. They haven't proved that they're elite. But at the same time, you're looking at the reigning champs, the Spurs. I mean, this is the model franchise that most people – I mean, Doc said it some – yeah, Doc said it today too. They said that even for coaches, that all coaches want to be like Doc – you know, all coaches want to be like Pop. And so when you put all of that together and you say that that's your first-round matchup, you kind of have to say – all right, well, you know, in any other case, probably, you know, they probably don't get knocked down in the first round, but it is what it is, and you just kind of look towards next season, because honestly, even if you took a lot of the issues that people say about the Clippers, like, oh, their bench, or they have to play their heavy, they have to play their starters heavy minutes, or, you know, even the people that say, like, oh, you know, Doc's plays, or whatever it might be, it's the Spurs.
Right. Yeah.
So.
That's true, yeah, definitely. You know, people are going to come up with the narrative that, oh, the Clippers are another first-round exit for the Clippers. You know, oh, it's the same old Clippers. But you failed to mention that they're playing a team that many pegged to either make the conference finals or the finals. So essentially, the Clippers made it to the conference finals and played the Spurs and lost, people would be like, yeah, great season. They made it to the conference finals. But they're playing arguably the second best team, and the best team in some people's eyes in the first round. So it's not just another first round exit.
Yeah, it really isn't. And even like you were saying at the beginning of the season, because you were saying it a bit, I was saying it a bit. Just slow down on all this. Oh, the Clippers are the favorites type talk when they haven't earned anything, and. You know, a lot of the loyal fans, a lot of the organization, the people on the team, they'll be the first people to tell you that they haven't won anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so it's not even about the people that are just so quick to remind and say, hey, the Clippers are the Clippers. It's just that, yeah, absolutely, is that they crap, where was I going with this? Yeah, it's that, like, let's slow it down. And before we even say let's get to the NBA Finals, how about just making the conference finals first and making that step, because they haven't even been there yet. And hey, if that one game was switched, if it was, you know, if it was San Antonio in the five, and you look and you go, okay, Memphis beat up, sure there's history there, but it'd be, you know, a pretty fun rubber match depending on who you ask. I mean, for me personally, I was kind of hoping for Memphis because I kind of saw it as, hey, the Clippers took one series, Memphis took the other series, now it's the rubber match, let's just take it.
Right.
And then plus because there's certain things where the Clippers, they've definitely been built up into this super villain narrative of the NBA where they're kind of like wrestling heels. And also there are a lot of unglamorous, unsexy things about the Grizzlies and how they play and how they kind of, you know, are a beat 'em up team. I was kind of excited for that matchup. I kind of saw it like a Freddy versus Jason matchup of the NBA.
Yeah.
But given that, right? Like, say, you know, like with the health and whatever, that I still thought at the end that that's a series that the Clippers could have advanced in. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you're looking at who they play next, and it's probably. Yeah,
Houston or Dallas.
It's probably Houston. Could be Dallas, but probably Houston, given the odds. That's another team that the Clippers have done well historically against, especially in the CP3 era. So you take those two, and then you go look, and you're guaranteed you don't have to play both the Spurs and the Warriors. But even putting that aside, at least it means that they have the best shot at getting to their first conference finals.
Right. Yeah, and that's the way it should be, especially you know, if the real seedings were there, that's the shot that they would have, you know. But now they're not going to get that chance because one of the two teams, the two top three teams in the West is going to go home.
Yeah, it's not just the thing about, and I was talking about this a little bit earlier with folks at Clipper Blog, especially Law Murray. He was saying that, hey, we can talk about the Spurs and what the matchup is and how unfair it is, but honestly, for the Clippers, you do look at that and you say that, hey, if you want to win, sometimes you do just have to prove yourself against the best. I'm not going to argue any of that. That's actually a good point. But if you look at the other stuff about it too, is from the NBA standpoint, what benefit does it give the NBA for such a major matchup of good teams to just happen in the very first round, early on in the playoffs, when you want actually to people, if when you want the audience to continue watching deeper and deeper into the playoffs?
Right. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that the consensus is this will be the best first round series by far. You know, because it's definitely the two best teams facing each other in a first round matchup. So that's probably it.
It is. I mean, there's probably no. There might be other seven-game series, but there's probably not going to be another seven-game series as good as what Clippers-Spurs would be if it does go seven games. Looking at the matchup, though, where do you stand? Like, how do you feel the Clippers' chances are? Do you think that they got a chance? Yeah. And on top of just having a chance, what do you think are going to be the strengths?
Yeah, so after saying all that, and I don't want to sound like, it kind of probably sounded like, oh yeah, I'm scared, really scared of the Spurs and the Clippers have no shot. But that's not the case, because the Clippers are a really good team. The Spurs are a really good team. And it's, to me, it's actually a toss-up. I think it's a toss-up because you have to take into account the Clippers do have home court advantage, so that helps them out a little bit. The Clippers are actually the second best road team on the season at 26-15. The Spurs are barely over 500 at 22-19, so there's an advantage for the Clippers. Of course, everybody knows about the Clippers' prolific offense. Spurs are also a top 10 offense, as well as a top 10 defense, so that they have the advantage defensively. I think. The parts where the Clippers can exploit the Spurs is the front court, particularly if Thiago Splitter does not play or isn't near 100%. That's going to affect the series a lot, because he does. He's going to be the one that would be guarding Griffin, and without him, they've got Duncan, and Duncan will probably be on maybe Griffin a little bit, and DJ, and then DL. And that's the thing. And DL can somewhat guard him, but not for long stretches, I don't think. So I think the Clippers' athletic front court can take them. The Spurs' wings are the issue. I mean, with Kawhi and Danny Green, those guys are long, and they're very good defenders. And so you're going to probably see both of those guys take shots at CP3 maybe, and JJ, and maybe Corey Joseph as well, too, on CP3. So that's going to be interesting. My hope is that Pop plays Marco Bellinelli 40 minutes on JJ Redick. That would solve the Clippers' problems. Like, hey, Pop, play Marco.
Just him and Bonner, 48 minutes every game.
Yeah, there you go. That would help, yeah. I mean, those it's going to be intriguing to see how those matches come out. Of course, the Spurs bench is better than the Clippers, but Jamal has historically had some very good games against the Spurs. He's the Spurs are one of the teams that he tends to shoot lights out against. As well as Big Baby's had a couple of nice games too. So I think, you know, I think all the Clippers have to be clicking on all heels in order to beat them. But they can't. I mean, they've got home court. You know, they just hold court at home and steal one on the road. But as like I said earlier, they're a good road team. So if they can steal one on the road, then I think they can take it. I think they can take it in seven.
Yeah, it's because you brought up Jamal too. I mean, when it comes to the bench, I mean, he is the bench. And I think back to that last game they played, even without Blake, they beat the Spurs, and they had a huge game. Like that was one of Jamal's best games of the season.
Right at home, right? The 119-115.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a big game.
And I just look back at that, and I'm like, can we get that from Jamal? Can the Clippers get that from Jamal after the injury? Because I mean, he hasn't looked great since he's come back, and that's been a major concern.
Yeah, that has been a concern. Although it's only been four games since he's returned, so it's, you know, he hasn't looked great, but it hasn't been that much time. And then if you give him another 5 days of rest until game one, you know, hopefully he'll be ready to return to the old Jamal once the playoffs start.
Yeah, definitely hope so. I hope the rest is good. I know that the doc said he just wanted to get Jamal some games in. So maybe part of that was just, hey, let's just get some of the rust off early. And probably wasn't 100% at the time, but he just felt like he was ready at a point where he was willing to come back, even if he wasn't ready to come back 100%. And I could see that, just to, you know, make sure that the rust isn't right there, like right in game one. And a concern of the playoffs when you're just bringing in a guy that hasn't played in, what, like 2 months, something like that.
Yeah, definitely. You gotta get that rust off.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the way it's looking. And honestly, I'm looking and you start talking about this bench. And yeah, even though this bench is probably not going to play a whole bunch of minutes, and that's one of the beauties is with these long TV timeouts, because they're national games now, that it's more rest for the starters, and that just in general, with it being the playoffs, that you're going to play the starters more minutes. You wonder who plays on the bench. And I mean, I'm thinking of, oh, who would you even put out? And you start thinking about stuff like, could there be a small ball type front court because of the Clippers' big issues where you're playing Jamal at the three, and you even play Lester Hudson, even though he's not been with the team for that long, alongside Austin Rivers, and you just hope that their wings produce and that they can do enough in that regard to kind of nullify the fact that they're pretty thin up front.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know what Doc's thinking, but I mean, Kawhi is the one I'm scared of because he's so long and he's so athletic, and you know, he might have a big series. And pretty much Barnes is the only wing defender that has the length to guard him. So I'm thinking maybe Jordan Hamilton should get a few minutes too, just to, you know, because he's what, 6'7", 6'8". You know, he's long enough where you're young and athletic where he can give him some spot minutes to guard him.
I don't know. I mean, I look at Jordan Hamilton. I like Jordan Hamilton. Mm. I'll start off with that. I'm not trying to say that he shouldn't get some burn. I don't know if this is the right series for it, because knowing the Spurs and just how sophisticated that offense is and how it runs so well, I feel like because a lot of what Jordan Hamilton does right now, because he's not an elite defender yet, he can build up towards one. But, you know, it's the time is now, is that I feel like he overcommits a lot of times. And when you're, you know, running through and you're trying to play help defense, that's when you leave open shooters. And with the Spurs, I mean, seeing open Spurs in the corner, that is the thing of nightmares for opposing teams.
Yeah, that's true. I guess Austin Rivers, Austin Rivers will probably be the other wing guy that'll take one of those of Kawhi and or Danny Green.
Yeah, I think it has to be. And even with Barnes, I think what Kawhi's going to do is if he's not spotting up, he's going to post. And
right.
because of his size, he can post Barnes pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm worried about that too, because if he gets deep enough, you're either going to – I don't know. I don't think you can leave Barnes on an island. I think he's an
right.
above-average defender, but he's not the kind of defender where you can allow him to just, you know, go in the post
yeah.
and he'll just be like, I got this. You know, like that's
right. –
Not really been his game, and I'm not saying that, you know, like, that's a flaw. Like,
yeah.
you just can't say,
because,
you know, like, that's just, you can't say that, you know, like, because that's never been one of his things. You can't just expect him to be like, oh, he's a bad post defender. Like, he's a three. So, I mean, you know, and it's like, he's good at what he does, and let's just focus on, like, what he is instead of what he isn't. And I feel like that's been one of the things that we consistently talk about when we talk about Matt Barnes, which has kind of dropped off a little bit during the season, because he's actually had a pretty good season.
Yes.
But
yes,
I know
yes.
definitely, like, if we go all the way back to the conversations we were having in the summer and the preseason with Matt, it was like, what isn't Matt Barnes? And, you know, that's how we were deconstructing him.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, he's had a good season, and, definitely, you know, he has his strengths. He's got his weaknesses, that's the thing. Like, if you're going to have him in the post all alone guarding Kawhi, you know, that's not going to be good. But then if you do send a second defender, a help defender, Kawhi's going to have to kick it out to one of their many shooters. So that's one thing I am concerned about.
Yeah, I mean, Kawhi is good. I think everything about this series that scares me.
Yeah, he's definitely the number one concern.
Yeah, it all hinges on like him in the middle, him at the center of it.
Right.
Right. So.
Because with Parker, I mean, Parker's as good as he is, he has a tendency to, I mean, he's already, you know, he's a little bit older and he's not the same player that he used to be, and even during the last year in the playoffs, there's a couple of games where he took plays off where it didn't seem like he was going full throttle. So. I think in a matchup against CP, CP has his number. So I'm not worried about him. And Duncan is as good as he is. You know, he is, I mean, still, 39 years old, and going up against an athletic front court. So that's, you know, that's not as much of a concern. But Kawhi definitely is the key.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Kawhi now. I just, you know, hopped on Basketball Reference. And this is really interesting, too, because, you know, I guess what sticks out in my mind is that first game when they lost 89-85. And they had the lead. It looked like they were going to win at home. And
yeah,
they just could not score. Sure. And I remember so many live ball turnovers in the fourth quarter. The swarming defense of the Spurs just, you know, it just because of that, nobody wanted to shoot the ball. And all it left was these late shot clock shots where they just had to heave because they were going to turn it over one way or another. And so they were either turning the ball over, and a lot of that was Kawhi's hands, or they were just taking bad shots. But I look at this over the series, and in the three games the Clippers have played against the Spurs, this is actually surprising that Kawhi – his shooting hasn't been that great. He's gone to the line a lot, so his true shooting is actually still 50%. It's close to 51%. It's at 508. But you look at his other, and like he's shooting less than 30% from three. He's shooting a shade above 40% regular against the Clippers. So I mean, I don't know if part of that is just that he wasn't healthy or what. And of course, you know, small sample size, but. I mean, that's going to be the thing to look at, like, because the defense already there, but if the offense is there too, then then it's exactly what we were talking about the past few minutes about all the terrifying things that Kawhi Leonard brings to the Spurs.
Right.
But if he shoots like the way he has, and it's not to say he's not producing, because even then he was getting 18-7 with three assists against the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, against the Clippers in this matchup. Man, I mean that does take away one huge thing.
Yeah, it's exactly. If you can nullify his shooting where he's not where he has those kind of percentages, then yeah, that definitely would be a factor in the Clippers' advantage. So
yeah, but yeah, I mean, it might just be a shootout. I expect a lot more games like the I expect a lot more games like the last two games that we saw of the series, rather than the first two. And with that as well, I mean, one interesting thing that was tweeted out by Isaac Lohenkron, who's one of the radio guys for the Clippers team, is that he actually mentioned that the Clippers had a higher offensive rating against the Spurs this season at 109.8 than any other opponent had against San Antonio.
That was a pretty astounding stat. But yeah, it's when you look at it, these teams do match up well against each other, and the Clippers definitely do match up well against the Spurs, because they have, like I was saying earlier, there's areas where they excel at that gives the Spurs fits, namely JJ Redick, you know, running through screens and always in motion. Somebody's got to guard him for 40 minutes. CP is definitely a master of what he does. The pick and rolls, the Spurs, they had trouble defending the pick and rolls with CP. It was definitely an issue for them. And then the athleticism in the front court, that was another issue. So yeah, the Clippers, they didn't have a problem scoring against the Spurs. They were scoring in bunches. You know, it was definitely that's not the concern. It's on the defensive end is if they can hold the Spurs and do an above average job, then I like their chances.
Yeah, and you just hope that they play aggressively, because one thing is that if they don't play with pace, I feel like the Spurs will just dismantle them, because if they're trying to pick their spots in a situation where the Spurs, with the defense that they have, can be set.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely got to be aggressive. The third meeting where the Clippers beat them in San Antonio 105-85, Blake had a great game that game, 31 points, 13 boards, 5 assists. He was extremely aggressive. He was attacking them. He was posting up against, you know, Baines and Duncan and all these guys. And I think that's the Blake we're going to have to see. I mean, Blake, this whole series, he's going to have to basically return to 2011, 2012 Blake and just attack. Because when he does that, like, it just creates another dimension, like, where they can't guard him. You know, he's got so many things he can do with the ball when he's attacking the hoop on the pick and roll or just posting up, and he just creates a lot of problems. So I think he has to be aggressive this series.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what he wrote on Players Tribune a little while back, where he was saying that the regular season, a lot of it was him wearing down, so he was saving himself for the playoffs.
Yes.
So let's see what he's been saving himself for, right?
Yeah.
It's what it comes down to. But I mean, how do you feel the series is going to go, though? You think it's? I think it's a 7-game series.
I do too. I do too. I think the teams are going to hold. Each team's going to win on their home court. Maybe one of each team will steal a game on the road, but it's going to be really close. It's going to be high scoring, very exciting series, and it's going to come down to basically game 7. So, yeah, it's going to be a nerve-wracking week and a half or so.
It is, and I mean, a lot of it is just, is there a team that has historically struck fear into their opponent more than the Spurs have? I mean, you look at it and you want to talk about just the history of the Spurs in general and all the teams they've just kind of dispatched in the way to getting their 5 titles. I mean, you're talking about So Miami does not become a dynasty because of last season. So that's the obvious one, right? Like, so there's no Miami to be beat. But then you look at the other teams too, is that, you know, Detroit didn't go back to back because of the Spurs, they're right there. LeBron, he gets swept his first trip to the finals, so the potential first chance of the Cleveland Cavs getting a ring with LeBron, like, Spurs took care of that. You look at that awesome Jason Kidd Nets team with, like, Gary Kittles and Keith Van Horn, Kenyon Martin. The Knicks. The best chance the Knicks have had in like 16 years.
Yeah, man. Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah. And it is. It's because of, you know, Pop and the Spurs. They're terrifying.
Yeah. However, they've never won back-to-back titles.
Yeah.
So there's that you can hang your hat on.
So you're hoping the precedent there is in our favor.
Exactly. Just make sure it's you know what? Actually, the Spurs have. I mean, as good as they've been, as great as they've been, they've had a few blips here and there. Like, for instance, they were swept by the Suns in 2010. That Suns team, which is, I kind of compare to the Clippers team too, because they had a prolific offense with a great point guard in Steve Nash. Clippers, you know, that equals the Clippers Chris Paul, basically. You had the 2009 Spurs who lost 4-1. 2008 or 9, whatever. They lost 4-1 to the Mavs. The Mavs handled them pretty well. So there's been cases where they've. And then there's the OKC team that was heavily. Remember that year? The Spurs won 10 in a row. Swept the first two rounds, won the first two games of the conference finals. OKC came back and won four games in a row.
Yeah, that was the year they swept the Clippers too.
Yeah, that was the year. Yeah, that was the year the Spurs looked invincible, leading to the conference finals. And they looked like there's no way they're going to lose. After two games in the conference finals, they were on their way, and then OKC just washed them in four games. It was incredible to just watch that happen. So they have their moments, like, where if it's a certain matchup that gives them trouble, then they can fold. So the Clippers do have the elements of a team that can give them fits.
Yeah, and then you wonder where the Spurs are too. I mean, I think a lot of the fear just comes from so much respect. But I was reading some stuff earlier today as well about the way they are, and I guess it's one of those things where with them, they've really been fighting to just keep their positional standing as well. And they've been on one of the hottest streaks since the All-Star break, and even before, going back to January. But you also look at things, and we usually hear about Pop doing things different ways, giving his starters rest and stuff. And yet, Tim Duncan hasn't had a game off since December. That's not really the type of thing that we've seen a lot from the Spurs the past couple seasons. So you wonder about that too.
Yeah. It seems like they've had to play catch up just to, make ground in the standings, because they got off to what is a relatively poor start for them. So they, playing Duncan that many games in a row, it might have an adverse effect, especially when it comes to the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of me was kind of like, what if this, and this was, thinking back, going back to December, January times when the records, of course, were very different for a lot of the teams, was, man, Spurs would make like the scariest. Yeah. I mean, they would make a scary and amazing 8 seed.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
I thought that was where it was headed. I thought they were going to get the 8 seed. Eden, that would have been great. I thought it was going to be Spurs and OKC as a 7th and 8th.
It was looking like that. Yeah, it was just one of those things. I mean, you go back and I think so different, just even like 3 months time, but maybe the Spurs are the 7th or 8th seed and they just finally get healthy towards the end of the season. At the same time, OKC gets healthy and all their guys are back, and then you have like Ibaka and Durant. They're looking scary as ever. But, of course, you know, that's not what happened. But I mean, it looks, I mean, that's the thing, is it's such a crazy, thing this season is, right? Just looking at it, and the, you know, the whole span of it, and even looking in the Clippers context, right? Going back in where they were to start the season, 5-4, and then how it looked like they were probably going to be starting the playoffs on the road as, you know, as late as 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. And, like, all this hand-wringing and whining about the bench and where they are and Doc, and honestly, I mean, you look at it, and they tie for the second-best regular season record that the team has ever had. And this is also considering that loss of Blake for 5 weeks. I mean,
Jamal for whatever.
So,
I mean, yeah, all things considered, you know, and if you take into account their lack of a bench and their injuries and stuff, and you know, the Rockies start, and at one point they were 42-25, and you know, some people were saying, like, hey, they might miss the playoffs. The Clippers weren't that far out of the ninth seed at one point. So, since then, you know, for them to recover and literally basically have the second best record and would in the real standings would have had the two seed. It's a pretty good turnaround.
It has been a fantastic turnaround. And I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, I keep saying it's one of those things, but you look at it and just a few different bounces, and we have a completely different result. But that's basketball, right? That's a lot of things. I mean, I feel like a lot of times we're looking back at these situations saying, oh, if this had happened, or if this had happened, if they didn't do this, or they didn't do this. And that's the beauty of hindsight, is that we can look back and we can make those comments. We can make those types of statements. But it's not like we can, you know, go back to those specific moments and say, oh, okay, you know, it's going to be done over because we know, because we don't know. But that's the thing, too. I mean, when you're at a casino and you're at a blackjack table, and you're looking at that king that blackjack dealer has, and you're looking at your 16. I mean, you're not looking at it and you're gonna be like, oh, I know that next card's gonna be a five. Like, nobody knows that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They, you know, hindsight is crazy because they definitely had a few opportunities squandered. You know, there's games they could have won, here and there, and just a one game difference would have basically sealed them the two seed. But then again, you could have said the same thing for all the other teams. The Spurs had,
yeah,
you know, they lost to the freaking Lakers.
Yeah.
At home. Yeah, Swaggy P.
Swaggy. That three was still insane, too.
Yeah, that was insane. They lost to the Knicks after the Knicks had lost like 52 games in a row and they somehow beat them.
Yeah.
I mean, some things you just can't explain. You know, I'm sure they want those games back, too.
Yeah, and it's just the season, right? Like, you're gonna lose to bad teams. It's a long season. It's just because you play 82 games, these things are bound to happen.
Right.
No, but.
What are your predictions?
For the series?
Yeah.
I think it's gonna be seven games. It's going to be seven games, and that is just because these two teams are that good and they will play each other that closely. But if the Clippers are able to win in seven games, and I do think that they, because of the home court, I'm going to say that the Clippers will win in seven games. If that happens, then I feel really good against their whoever they play in the next round, and we'll see who they play in the conference finals. And really, if they get to the conference finals, I'm happy about that. I really am. I've been kind of, you know, going to some of our Warriors friends though, and they're planting the seed of doubt in their mind about the season. Like you know, the Warriors are good. They're gonna make the conference final. They're probably making it out of the West. I'm not gonna deny them that. But it's been fun to kind of, you know, throw some softballs at them and say like, hey, 67-15. You know, last team to do that was Dallas, and I believe the last time that happened, that there was also a team that made the eighth seed on the last day. How did that go?
Oh man, deja vu, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like they're going to beat the Pelicans. They are going to beat the Pelicans, but I'm really excited to watch Anthony Davis and play off Eric Gordon.
Hey, I really am. I mean, hey, man, you never know. Luke Babbitt might have a monstrous game. You never know.
No, and it's crazy, too, because I was looking so deep into it, like looking at like how close the variance is and stuff like that, and I was like, oh, what was Dallas's net rating during the season? Oh, 7.2. What was the Warriors? Oh, negative 0.3. And I was like, okay, so technically you could say that the Pelicans are a better team than that Warriors team in terms of net rating. But this Warriors team also better than that Dallas team. But hey, you never know, right? That's what the playoffs is for. Exactly. It's crazy.
Exactly. Like Herm Edwards says, you play to win the game.
Play to win the game. If they get out of the series, you feel the same way? You think they're going to make it to conference finals?
I think so, yes. I think if they beat the Spurs, that basically will be more or less their conference finals. Once they get past them, the second round, I think whoever it is, the Rockets, I mean, if it's the Mavs, Clippers off home court, and you know they pretty much handled the Mavs the last couple of years, so I don't see an issue with that. And then with the Rockets, even though they'll have home court, the Clippers have, since CP3's been here, James Harden hasn't done very well. The Clippers are one team where basically the James Harden has struggled against. So I think I like the Clippers' chances to make it to the conference finals if they do get past the first round.
Yeah, just a matter of getting through that first round.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. But, all right. So you've got Clippers in seven?
I have Clippers in seven.
I've got Clippers in seven.
But don't hold me to it, man. It's. I think Clippers in
no,
seven.
No, I mean. No, that's the thing, is I mean, in a matter of 2-3 games, I mean, it can be very different, right? And then it's going to make us change what we say right now. But I mean, as of this moment, without knowing how the playoffs are going to go, that's at least my early prediction. And part of that's optimism. Part of that is that I genuinely believe in this Clippers offense, that I feel like it's a juggernaut.
Yes, it definitely is.
All right. I think that does it for us then. Dave, thanks for, you know, another great episode.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Okay, well, for David Deep, for Brandon Tomioi, once again, this is the Full Sail Podcast, and thank you for sailing with us again.